Thank you very much, Raphael, for taking time with me today. I'm really, really excited to learn more about your work and the fascinated intersection of indigenous traditions in osteopathic care. For your perspectives paper, of course, on exploring consciousness and body representations in osteopathic care caught my attention because it dwells into areas that challenge and expand traditional frameworks in osteopathic medicine. So I'm eager to discuss how you've navigated these complex cross-cultural dimensions. So before we dive into the details of your approach, I'd love to hear what inspired you to explore this topic and how you became interested in connecting indigenous traditions with Western osteopathic healthcare.
First of all, thanks very much for the invitation, Torsten. I'm very happy to share my experience and in this field, which I agree may be quite disturbing for many people and probably for many of my colleagues, because I'm coming from the academic world where I held positions in the US at the Steele Research Institute, in the UK at the British School of Osteopathy, and I've published many papers in, let's say, in clinical trials, in physiological studies. And the thing is that it's to the shortest answer to your question is experience. When you have such different bodily experience, that is not described in books. And when you're a researcher, when you're curious, you start looking into different fields, I would say, fields outside your comfort zone. Say the comfort zone would be musculoskeletal care, low back pain. We apply clinical guidelines, which is fine. But for some patients, they have a different body representation. And what we've called indigenous body representation, probably it was misleading many, many colleagues. This is why choose a better approach and more talking about indigenous epistemological frameworks. It means how different people from different regions of the world produce knowledge. It's about knowledge production, and it is not only the Western way of producing knowledge. And the good news is that I've been able to produce knowledge with the Western standards. And now my work, as you said, because many areas in the osteopathic field are challenged by current evidence, and we need to update models. I'm talking about osteopathy in the cranial field, visceral osteopathy, biodynamics, and here we have two options. One option would be we stop teaching that because we don't have enough information. That's too complicated. This type of approach doesn't fit within materialistic models of healthcare, or we need to find outside in other fields. This is why we've worked with anthropologists, with medical doctors, with indigenous people, and just asking them, how do you handle this type of approach? And here we're jumping into non-materialistic frameworks. And the good news is, now we have science, the science, neuroscience of the self, neuroscience of consciousness, is now starting to address and describe human experience that in the past have been only described by religion and philosophy. So we have new
Raphael,
fields opening.
Raphael, please, the whole time when you're talking, my mind was very curious what kind of experience you had, which opened the door to explore more in this field.
I'm French and Peruvian, and I was born in Morocco. I grew up in Morocco, and as you know, I lived in the US, and my wife, she's from Switzerland right now. So I had a kind of flexibility. And after I would say a lot of very suffering, a lot of deep suffering in my private life. I understood that the Western way wouldn't be enough to take care of myself at this point of time. So this is why I returned to in Peru at home to have some indigenous healing tradition in the Peruvian rainforest. So this is sacred plants, and this is we have to put probably a disclaimer, very important for your audience. Here in Europe, this is forbidden. This is illegal, but in Peru at home, it's part of the cultural environment. It's we can do that. And again, so I had the kind of very powerful shift of consciousness, you know, moving from baseline to altered state of consciousness, and with a different narrative. And every time I had this type of experience, just it was only for my personal well-being and health. But I always had some I can recognize that, you know, especially with gentle touch, with interoceptive touch. I can recognize that. And then, but, you know, that was two separate things. And then one day, Jason Exton, the director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine, a colleague when I was in Kirksville, sent me documents that suggest that Andrew Taylor Steele was a medicine man as well from a Native American tribe from Shawnee, because he lived there a couple of months, and everything started to make sense for me. And again, and probably I want to put another disclaimer for your audience. This is an important historical part, and but even the Native American today in the US, they don't want to live in like they did 200 or 300 years ago. They want to be in our modern civilization. The thing is that now we have this historical link, and I have just said we have new field of neuroscience that can expand the understanding of the non-physical component of the body. And we have done many things in the in osteopathic care that would be probably better explained within non-materialistic frameworks compared to materialistic frameworks. So a gentle touch with narrative, with a shift of consciousness, which can be achieved in by meditation, mindfulness, kind of things that are more familiar for people living in Europe. So we're talking more about a way of shifting your attention, shifting your focus, and that can be applied everywhere in the globe, you know.
This is really cool what you say now. So really, for me, it you mentioned different parts, different aspects of osteopathy. So how do you deal with the integration of indigenous non-materialistic perspectives in the materialistic and also in the esoteric popularistic approaches in osteopathic care?
That's a great question. And with the friends we have in common, you know, Christian Lunghi, Francesca Baroni, Gian Domenico D'Alessandro, most of them are Italian, don't know why, but that's all. Ciao tutti. We shifted this discussion from professional perspective to patient's perspective, exactly like I did when I was a full-time researcher in Kirksville 10 years ago. That was totally out of the scope of my understanding of my own life and how I treated patients. And it was fine. No, this is, I feel this is very important because I added the experience. So this is something that is not, this is not a rigid framework for specific populations or something that you are born and that you will hold all the time. In the Western world, you know, the spiritual care is included in clinical guidelines for end-of-life care and palliative care. So the thing is that they want to, people dying, they want to give a meaning and a purpose for their life. The only difference with indigenous people, they do that, they have rituals throughout their entire life. You know, when the change of the season, when a child become an adult, they have rituals, and then they have very powerful rituals where they shift their level of consciousness from baseline, from what we are, the one we have currently just discussing, to something that is bigger than us. And again, something important for your audience, 60% of the population worldwide believe in the concept of oneness. Oneness is a, I would say, it's a neutral word to say that people believe that they belong to something bigger than themselves. And so if patients has this type of belief, whether culturally inherited or whether acquired following a life accident or an important loss, you won't treat the symptoms. They will interpret their symptoms differently. They will consider their body differently. So even if it's the same, might be the same manual techniques, the frameworks we use, in which we use these techniques, might be different. And this is why we've talked about epistemological flexibility. We need to be flexible. When I have patients coming and explaining that they have pain because they just had a, you know, heavy lift, they have a materialistic perspective, and it's okay. And I don't want to bother this type of people with other things. But when you have other people, they say, well, you know, my I don't know, my last kid is leaving home. You know, no, I'll be alone with my husband. We haven't been like that for the past 20 years. I'm kind of a bit scared and I have low back pain. So you know that the non-physical components, emotion, psychology, and existential components might be more important for this type of patients. So the therapeutic alliance will be different, and the type techniques might be different.
Can you hear, this is really important point for me as a practitioner and clinician, can you here elaborate more precisely how culturally sensitive, person-centered care can be practically implemented in the osteopathic practice without stereotyping or rigidly categorizing patients' social cultural beliefs? This is what you're saying right now. Can you give more precise examples, approaches, how you do it in your clinic?
That's a great question, and I was just about to say that I'm a clinician, mainly a clinician. I've been a full-time researcher, but because I had questions to try to explain what was happening in my clinical practice. So in order to, you know, to help clinicians understand what would be better for their patients, this is Christian and Francesca. They published the paper on the Kinefin framework, and we've been working. That would be a fourth paper together, and we have refined this Kinefin framework. It means what's the better narrative and what's the better manual approach that will make better to improve sense making for this type of patients. So again, it's a clinical tool to guide patients. It's not a rigid framework to say you have this and this, so you will have this type of technique and this type of discourse. Again, it can be flexible because belief system can evolve over time. What we've done together is to add something that was importantly missing is what are the health belief systems of those patients? Do they believe that their body is mainly a physical body and focusing on biology, on the biopsychosocial approach? And here I will certainly provide the same type of treatment that physiotherapists or chiropractor would do, because we need to apply, well, we just need, it's not something rigid, is that many practitioners who had the same question, they have produced guidelines, so that would be stupid not to use them. So this is something important. But if we have, and in this case, I would say the cause-effect relationship is quite easy to understand. But, you know, for other types of people who have different health belief system and believe that the non-physical components are more important than the physical components, or the healing takes place in the non-physical part. And again, I know that I'm just saying might be quite disturbing for many Western people, or many people who have only had Western experience of healing. But if you go to South America, to North America, the traditional healers, they treat patients only in the non-physical way. And then when something is up, the treatment happens, it will happen later in the physical body.
But how it looks like in your clinical practice?
No, again, I'm an osteopath, so just therapeutic alliance and interoceptive manual approaches. So for this type of patients, the touch is more an intuitive approach, okay? Because the relationship between cause and effect, you can't discuss that later. And this is very similar to what early osteopaths were describing, you know, very intuition, just, you know, let the body heal. And this is something that can be considered as strange, or here in France as pseudoscience. I don't know in Germany. But if we use indigenous epistemological frameworks, we can much better explain this type of intuitive approaches. And with the specific, when I say interoceptive touch, is a gentle touch without moving the joints. And this type of touch, this is what you've presented said last month in the UK, or it has a different connection in the brain. So it's linked to the autobiographic part of the brain. So you can explain much better the psychosomatic approaches. So again, if patients they ask for that, well, I can propose that. Okay, if they come from just they want to have less, they want a decrease in pain and improvement in function, I won't bother them with that. But if we have patients coming, you know, if we have a yoga instructor, you know, practicing 3 or 4 hours a day, probably. No, not probably. We have a lot of studies showing that his perception of his own body, and when it's this type of people they touch, they have a different perception.
Yeah.
And this comes to something that is very specific to indigenous traditions. They don't have any training. It's just life is the best trainer. So they have to, it's an unbodied experience. They have to learn. Then said they have to be, and then it's like a guide, someone who had already traveled to this journey that is able to help other people.
Yeah, I wrote once a paper about osteopathy and yoga. It's a little bit similar also, that in yoga, life itself is the deepest training to train others in specific areas like osteopathy. My question now is, what are some of the main criticisms you've encountered regarding the inclusion of indigenous healing traditions in evidence-informed osteopathic approaches, and how do you address these critics?
That's a great question. I was not prepared. If I want to be honest with you, I was not prepared to that, because, you know, coming from, you know, the first University of Osteopathy, founded by A.T. Steele, and, you know, later on working at the BSO, I saw that just, promoting critical thinking, it means that I saw we were able to talk about absolutely everything, but something that could be in peer-reviewed papers. So we've published nine papers so far, and even with peer-reviewed papers, I'm invited in some congresses, and people say that it has nothing to do with osteopathic care. So again, the indigenous way of thinking is just to bring people back. It's not separation. So the question is, I don't want to promote separation. So I don't want to focus my energy on trying to explain to people something they have not experienced themselves. So there on what I can focus only on what I can control, and I can control my words, I can control my behaviors, and I can better explain what we've done. We're talking about flexibility. It means that there's something sometimes one system of knowledge production might be most suitable compared to another. The problem is that in 1910, 1910, the Flexner report was published, and it established the gold standard for Western medical training, and it was focusing on biology. And since this time, everything that was outside that was considered as pseudoscience, so homeopathy, osteopathy, chiropractic, which might be understandable at this period of time. But the thing is, the problem is now we have academics in the osteopathic fields who have the same language, saying that everything that falls outside the scope of musculoskeletal care is pseudoscience. So,
So, what steps do you propose for fostering greater academic engagement with diverse worldviews, especially in the fields like manual therapy that often rely on evidence-based paradigms now?
that's a great question. Again, I can't control on I don't think I have control on this type of on these people, and because they are stuck probably with their university policies, and we need to acknowledge that as well. But if you have a more larger perspective and indigenous perspective, we have the seasons. We are in the winter, and after the winter, the spring will come. So we are preparing the spring, so it's just a cycle. And I would say we are at the end of an important cycle because we can see so many resistance, so many aggressivity from people just because it seems like you're not allowed to even think differently to mainstream osteopathic care focusing on musculoskeletal care. So to me, it's a great opportunity, always just staying focused to continue to explain that, yeah, we have different worldviews, and new evidence is coming, and new evidence can be applied in the future, and we are bu building the first steps of this knowledge exchange, because I think one can inform the other.
And are the relational and spiritual dimensions of health proposed by indigenous traditions different from culturally historical different experience of Western patients, and how you deal with these differences?
Again, that's a great question because here in France, it's a secular country and very rigid. And I would say we're lucky to have such rigid frameworks because this is something that has to remain in the personal realm, not to be brought into the clinical practice. And as I said at the beginning of our chat, it's a lived experience. So what what they call mystical experience or spiritual experience is just a change, can now be described in a neuroscience, a change in multisensory integration. They are opening in the UK. They have the university where they study consciousness, and even in London at the Imperial College, they have a DMT study where they studied shift in consciousness. DMT stands for the dimethyltryptamine, and which is the main active component of a sacred plant in ayahuasca, the ayahuasca that I took in Peru. So again, that's a good example that they blend indigenous wisdom with the Western rigorous science in order to better explain those human experiences. So I'm not talking about spirituality, existential dimension. I'm just talking about changes in the brain, changes in multisensory integration. And I think that manual touch can be part of this type of not for everybody, obviously. If you have someone who I have a yoga center right just very close, and so many teachers, you can't, they, if they meditate 2 or 3 hours a day, practice yoga, so again, if they lie down, they close their eyes, you touch them, it's not like having someone, you know, who is working on the internet the whole day, you know, eating fast food and not doing nothing. So the body will respond differently. And what they and sometimes it can be very helpful, because that this type, if for example, people who have an earth attack, 30% of them, they have a near-death experience. And they say, and they are not prepared to say, to explain to that. So many of this type of patient explained to me, and I said, oh, that's normal. The brain, that happened in this part, what happened in this part of the brain is just the memory, the autobiographic memory just appeared again. So this is something that is described, and you have many papers published in peer-reviewed journals talking about the qualitative study and what people have seen during this type of experience. Again, it's extreme human experience, obviously, and there's no need to have such experience, but I'm sure with meditations, with yoga, just, you know, focusing on your own awareness and just knowing how your body operates will make you probably more sensitive to what happens in your patients. So to answer to your important questions, I'm always talking about physical bodily experiences and no more.
Yeah, I what you said about multisensory approaches in psychosomatic osteopathy, we call it multimodal approaches, where we use not only touch but also other sense organs, especially in the balance organs. Even there's research shows when you use more senses at the same time, afterwards the healing can get deeper. So you use also you combine different sense organs in your approach somehow?
I'm glad that I've discovered during your presentation that you were adding other source of information. When I talk about multisensory integration, it's the balance between interoceptive, proprioceptive, and exteroceptive informations. So we mainly focus on interoceptive approaches like cranial osteopathy, visceral osteopathy, gentle touch, and proprioceptive techniques, manual approaches with more soft tissues and HVLA. So we haven't explored the exteroceptive path, but I think this is something you've been working on for the past couple of years. So
Yes, yeah.
again, so it's we're just bringing new frameworks, and that can be, and that's the purpose of publishing in peer-reviewed journals. It means that it can be used for everybody. And we've tried the good thing, one of the good thing of science, it's we try to remain neutral. It means even if we talk about culturally sensitive approaches, people from different parts of the world, they can own and interpret this within their specific cultural environment and belief system.
What types of emergence evidence do you believe are the most compelling or necessary to support the inclusion of indigenous healing perspectives in, let's say, osteopathic care?
So clearly, it's the new field of consciousness, non-materialistic theories on consciousness. If Kuhn wrote published a paper last August, one and if you have the courage, one, it's 132 pages, and you have all the theories. And that include the materialistic perspective and the non-materialistic perspective. That's the most extensive literature review that has been published in the field. And this is something that that is interesting. You know, we've published a paper on, it was 2 years ago, with Christian Francesca and David Dupuy, Dr. David Dupuy. He's an anthropologist who made his PhD on the use of ayahuasca in Peru, and he belongs to research groups with neuroscientists, anthropologists, philosophers, medical doctors, and I think osteopathic practitioners or manual therapists are missing in this type of group, because this is something that with this type of touch, with gentle touch, I think we can reinforce the narrative and the way they explain the indigenous
Can
healing perspectives.
you more, sorry when I interrupt you, but for me it's important part when you say to increase or inform or strengthen the narrative. What exactly you mean by this?
Thanks for. I was just about
Ah,
to
okay.
focus on to focus on that, because basically what happens in indigenous or people who attend this type of rituals, you know, they have pain or suffering exactly like we, and basically they shift the level of consciousness, and there's a state of David Dupuy described as an hyper suggestive state. So you're very more suggestible to a different discourse, meaning that if you are suffered a loss and you feel alone and you feel connected to something bigger with this type of physical experience, it's easier for you to understand you're not alone. You are loved. You are with other people. You belong to something bigger, and you can reinforce that with touch. So basically, this is when I first met him, this is the first thing he talked. Why don't you explain osteopathy with this type of hyper suggestive states with a different narrative and different touch approaches compared to other people? We have people coming with specific complaint, and we give a different perspective compared to the other. We stay longer, we have time to build a strong therapeutic alliance, and we have a different manual approaches. You know, just touching in remote areas to the pain they feel, sometimes they can feel the what's happening. So that's a different narrative. And this might be enough to induce placebo effect. So and here this is why I'm I'm quite disappointed with some of my academics colleagues because here we are talking about hypersuggestibility, we are talking about placebo effects, we are talking about person-centered care, which is exactly the same. The only thing is that it's a non-materialistic framework, which might be better suitable for some patients, and others who prefer materialistic frameworks, it's fine. Yes, we have to, as I've explained, we need to be and to remain flexible.
Where do you see the most challenges in applying this endogenous aspects of healing in your patients or for other osteopaths in their treatment interactions?
Again, it has to go through a personal experience. This is why we are running workshops.
You mean drinking
Open.
ayahuasca?
No, cacao is enough. I don't want to be in jail, but with specific music, other cacao is illegal, and we have we are we all, we have a podcast as well, and I had an interview with one of the famous DJ, world famous DJ Moz, working with cacao and his music. Just like that, they people they can feel something different, and or other could be meditation. And just if you have a palpation, so sometimes they or practitioners or patients who come to our practice say, well, I had this experience in the past, but I didn't know that I could use that in my clinical practice. So, this is something it has to go through experience, but it can be meditation, it can be that no need to wait for a near-death experience, luckily.
I understand. And when you integrate with indigenous perspectives in Western, let's say Western osteopathic care, how you ensure that this process respects, authentically represents these traditions without reducing them to generalize, to commodify, or misinterpret these concepts?
Again, that's a great question, and probably a better wording, like I said, would be not indigenous, it indigenous epistemological frameworks, the way we produce knowledge, the way we produce understanding, and on how patients interpret their own bodily symptoms. And to I always start with my patients. How do you feel? Why do you think you have this type? And you just listen. Do they provide materialistic explanation or non-materialistic explanation, talking about emotions and what's going on, or just on the physical movement? And this is the best guideline to make sure it's patient-centered. This approach is patient-centered. So again, we've put that explicitly in one of our paper. I don't see osteopathic care as an integrative care, a blend of Western and indigenous. Even still didn't never had this type of approach. But the starting point of our work was the body mind spirit osteopathic tenet that was reintroduced in the US in 2002 without any explanation. So anyone can do anything and tell anything to everybody, which is not, I feel, not ethical. Okay. We are treating the body, mind, spirit. What is a body? What is a spirit? We don't have any clear definition in the profession. Though that was the starting point of our work. But the thing is that the body, mind, spirit, emotion is a legacy of it's the medicine wheel from Native American population. So the profession has incorporated one indigenous important healing principles into Western principles. So we may ask the American Osteopathic Association why they did that. Probably I can't answer this question, but the thing is that it's here and it's not explained. And so we, because I was trained as a researcher, I think the only way to provide clear information is to, you know, like I've explained, work with colleagues from different parts of the world, from experts from different fields, and just trying to update the models of practice that are currently challenged by materialistic frameworks.
Yeah, Raphael, is there anything else you want to say to in the end of our interview, which I really, really enjoyed very much?
Well, thanks again for the invitation. I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm just remain curious. You know, life is full of experiences. And I've been lucky, like I said, to have been exposed to different cultures, to different people in my entire life. So it's easier for me probably to change, to switch. But, you know, in our globally world, we have patients coming from different cultures, different backgrounds, people who had very deep suffering experiences. And it has to be, it might be useful to just to be exposed to different understanding of the body, just beyond the physical body.
Cool. And I'm really glad that we can see you in our workshop at the Osteopathieschule Deutschland, so that I can learn a little bit more how it looks like practically, what you're doing and what you're thinking and sensing in your seeing these concepts integrating in osteopathic clinical work.
Yes, thanks for the invitation. I'm glad to be able to travel to Germany and share, well, my experience and my expertise and just lines of research for those people interested in, again, going beyond the biology. Osteopathy has been unique in the healthcare field over the past 150 years. And I'm still affiliated with ATC Research Institute, my goal is to promote to perpetuate this tradition of, you know, thinking outside the box.
Thank you so much, Raphael. I enjoyed the interview
Thank
very
you,
much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.